Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I will give you my 16-team Super League. In a hypothetical world, if all the teams became, say, free agents, and you were trying to put together the most powerful college football conference you can, kind of like what the SEC is starting to do, what 16 teams would you include? I'll give you my list coming up in just a few moments. But you can always join the conversation. Feel free to continue to chime in. You can give us a call, 843-721-9500. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Leave a comment for the show by going online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page and leave a comment there. And you can always text the show as well, 843-608-1734 on the text line. We'll get to the Super Conference in a moment, but we took a trio of calls there at the end of the hour that were all really good. We're not a show that's built on calls. If you listen to sports talk, you listen to a lot of calls that, quite frankly, are not very good. We got three good ones, though, there last hour, and I just want to run through them quickly before I get to my Super Conference. And in no particular order, but just commenting on the thoughts that were brought up. For South Carolina, I can understand, as a Gamecock fan, some of the concern, because I think the path just gets tougher if a Texas and an Oklahoma enters. Also, I don't think it'd be the end of the expansion, which was also something else that was brought up from Matt in Charleston, who called and was talking about trying to kick teams out. I don't think we'll ever get that because of contracts. I mean, you know, look, Oklahoma and Texas are going to get out of their deals with the Big 12 to join the SEC, it looks like. So I imagine the SEC can find ways to get out of their deals with certain schools as well. But as long as there's these contracts, I don't know if it will happen. What my concern would be is that eventually we get to a point with all this. Because, as Matt mentioned, this is not going to end with Oklahoma and Texas. We'll see what happens with all the other teams in the Big 12. The belief is that the Big 12 will disappear and those teams will have to find a new home. And some will go maybe to the Pac-12. Some will go to the Big 10. Some may go to the ACC. Some may go to the AAC. Right? You may have to drop down a level. And we may have a Power 4, and then the group of 5 gets a little bit stronger. You take a team or two out of the Big 12 that nobody else may want in their conference. And then when they go to these conferences, then maybe other teams leave their conferences and they go here and here. And we may get all sorts of movement over the next couple of years. We'll see what sort of domino effect this begins, how big this could get. But my concern would be that it starts this idea of some sort of super conference. We've always heard this idea of the Power 5 schools breaking away from the NCAA and doing their own thing. And now with this news, I've even seen people that cover college football say, why doesn't the SEC just go off and do their own thing? They already have these 16 teams. Go grab like a Clemson, see if Notre Dame wants to join, right? Get up to 20 teams and go do your own thing with 20 teams. And you play each other and, you know, then you have maybe some of those non-conference games still. And then you crown like your own champion because you'll be that good of a conference if you get some of these other schools as well. The Athletic had a story over the weekend where an SEC source said that they'd rather have Clemson join instead of Texas. Let's go for Oklahoma and Clemson to come be the next two teams. Right, so I don't know if this is the end of it, but my fear, my concern would be that if you give an inch, they take a mile. Right, whenever you give somebody power, they're not going to relinquish it. A lot of times you may have somebody at work, right? You allow somebody to help you out with a task. You make somebody your assistant, whatever it may be. You give them some power at work. And then they start going to and doing things that maybe even go over your head. And eventually, who knows, that person's like taking your job. Right? You give them an opportunity and they run with it. And my point being that if you're a South Carolina, if you're a even Tennessee, if you're a Kentucky, I would be a little insecure. I would be a little maybe self-conscious with all this talk Because if the SEC was ever trying to pick, just say, the 16 best teams or the 12 best teams or whatever it may be, some sort of super conference, the second half of that conference wouldn't be included. And if you add an Oklahoma and a Texas, we've had a 16-team conference once. It didn't work out. It was 30 years ago. It didn't work. The conference folded. The SEC should be able to pull this off just fine. And then who knows? If the expansion grows even further from there. And at a certain point, the way the contracts line up and all that sort of stuff, right, you may get this idea like the European Super League, where they tried in Europe where they said, you know, forget all, let's take the 15 best teams. We'll go off and do our own thing. Let's get out of our league, out of these guys, yada, yada, yada. And it went over so poorly that they ditched that idea within 48 hours. And they said, oh, we were just kidding. Right, that's not happening, because the fans hated that idea so much. Just like I think college football fans would hate the idea of some sort of super league in college football. But people don't give things back. So if you vote to continue to allow these teams come in and you provide this opportunity or this power to Greg Sankey or the SEC, or just the idea like, wait a minute, we could really build something here. Right now, say we get, let's go out and try to get Clemson. And maybe this is completely pie in the sky. But we go out and we get this team, and we get this. And then it's like, well, why are we holding on to these other teams? Let's dissolve the SEC as we know it and start some sort of super conference with, say, the 16 best teams. It may sound like a ridiculous idea that may never happen, but it would be the ideal scenario for a lot of people in college football. I'm talking about the teams themselves, right? Or, say, a Greg Sankey, whoever could run that conference. And you have the 16 biggest brands in college football. And this just may be another step in that direction. I don't know if that would ever happen, but if I'm South Carolina, and it's not just to pick on South Carolina, right? Or even a Vanderbilt with their football program. They do well in baseball. They're a really good academic school. That's good to have in the conference. But when you talk about football, right, you're looking around thinking like, oh, boy, everyone's passing us by. They may move on without us. It's like, I don't know, you go to college or high school, you grow up with a buddy, and then you start hanging out like with the cooler crowd, or he starts hanging out with the cooler crowd, and he realizes, like, I don't really need you anymore. I'm going to go hang out with these kids. And you lose your friend growing up. And he's out hanging around with the other cool kids, and then you pass him in the hallway, and he pretends like he doesn't know you, and it's like, oh, man, there goes my buddy. And it's kind of like the SEC at a certain point. The schools, Alabama, LSU, Florida, Georgia, Greg Sankey, maybe they look around thinking, like, oh, well, we don't really need these other teams, kind of dead weight, which I think is also what Matt was alluding to, that you can afford to make a move like that and maybe replace them with other big schools. So my concern would be, A, competing in the short term when you make a tough conference only tougher, and B, people don't give things back. If you're going to continue to give the power to show like, yeah, let's bring these other schools in. Let's build this even greater conference. And at a certain point, based off of the contracts or the power that the SEC, the administrators may have, or just the ideas they get from all this, like, hey, let's branch off of this and build our own super conference. And it could leave you in the dust if you're a certain program that's not as highly regarded in that conference. But I do agree that I don't think this ends with just Oklahoma and Texas. It can't. I don't think the Big 12 can function without them. And now all those teams become free agents and have to find a new home. And then, again, maybe instead of having four conferences with each having something like 16 teams, maybe you try to build a fifth conference and you pluck from a little bit of I have no idea what's going to transpire in future years. 10 years ago, we were talking about the Pac-16, right? That was an idea. And then Texas A&M and Missouri end up going to the SEC. And this and that happened. And, you know, all sort of movement 10 years ago. And Rutgers joins the Big Ten. And then my own UConn Huskies are in the AAC and the Big East is gone. And, you know, it's crazy. The Big 12 may become like the Big East, and all those schools finding a new home, and West Virginia, right, going to the Big 12, and all sorts of movement. Because this won't end with Texas and Oklahoma. And the other thing I did want to touch on that was brought up there at the end of the hour by Rob, he snuck it in just before the hard out. Appreciate the call, Rob. Was about, yes, Missouri, when they went to the SEC, they won their division back-to-back years. Right? Texas A&M with Johnny Manziel had their best run when they first joined the SEC. Texas A&M's doing okay now as well. So there is that boost. Not only they're making more money, but also, and maybe it's something like beginner's luck, because both Texas A&M and Missouri, as soon as they joined the conference, they were having better years than they did before they joined the conference, oddly enough, right? Ironically, they go to a tougher conference, and they start playing better. So maybe there's some of that as well, which is why I asked earlier, do you think this will help Oklahoma and Texas or hurt them? Do you think this makes it easier on them to try to win a national championship or makes it harder? Because there's arguments on both sides. More so for Oklahoma because they're in a better position right now than Texas. But if Texas gets back to where they were, say, 15 years ago, where they're competing for national titles, right? In the SEC, it's only going to help recruiting because now not only are you a big brand like Texas or Oklahoma, but you're also playing in the best conference. No longer can Texas A&M be the ones. That's why they don't want Texas to join. Because they can say to all the Texas kids, like, hey, if you want to play in the SEC, the best conference in college football, you got to come to us. Texas may have a big brand, right? And maybe they got the Longhorns, their own TV, all that sort of stuff, but they're not in the SEC. Now, we are. You can come play for us and get in front of more eyeballs and on a better TV contract and make more money and get better. We make more money, you get treated better. It's the SEC. That's what Texas A&M would lose with Texas coming in, Oklahoma. It would only help their recruiting, I imagine. They'd have a tougher schedule, but they'd also have more wiggle room to try to make the postseason. Because, they're coming from the SEC. No wonder they lost two or three games. And then also by going up against the teams that you have to beat, it trains you better to then try to beat them. When you play the Big 12, that doesn't prepare you to then play in Oklahoma, or I should say play in Alabama in the playoff. But when you have to play a Georgia each week and then an LSU, then a Florida, right, you're going to be a little more prepared to then face them in the playoff to try to win a national title. And as we saw from Missouri and Texas A&M, right, they were buoyed a little bit there by joining the SEC that it elevated the program. In Missouri's case, at least for a couple years, Texas A&M, for the majority of their time in the SEC so far. I mean, they were a top five team last year. Should have another good year this year. But that takes me to this idea. We were going to do this on the show anyways. And then one of the callers last hour kind of alluded to this about building a super conference, that if it doesn't end with Oklahoma and Texas, if maybe years, maybe it takes decades from now, but eventually we get to some sort of point where there is no more SEC and Big Ten as we know them. Instead, we just have a super conference, and then everybody else does their own thing, and they figure out where they have to land. You know, they tried this in soccer, which is why I said that I don't think this is good for college football or us college football fans. The fans in Europe realized that's not a good idea with the European Super League, taking just the 15 biggest brands, right? Like if in Major League Baseball, if they did that. And they said, okay, forget everyone else. You go have your own league, but we're going to take the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Red Sox and the Yankees, right? We're going to go over here and we're going to take the 15 biggest names, maybe the White Sox. I don't know. Who are the 15 biggest brands in baseball? And we're going to go have our own league and get rid of all this dead weight over here. You guys go have your own league. You'll be like the B team and we'll be over here with all the stars and maximize our potential and our power with our biggest brands. And the fans in Europe realize, like, this is a terrible idea. We don't want to break up all these different leagues and rivalries and traditions just to have all the powers get even more powerful. But in college football, if we ever get to some sort of super league, what would that include? What 16 teams? If the SEC had their way and they say, okay, we're going to a 16-team conference, we're taking Oklahoma and we're taking Texas, and they could pick the 16 teams in that conference. They could say, okay, we're going to swap out a Vanderbilt for so-and-so. What would those 16 teams be? I jotted down this list, and I did it really off the top of my head. I wanted to do first thought. Initial thought, 16 biggest brands or teams. And it's a combination between teams that are good on the field, but also, for the sake of making money, which is this, that's what this is all about, you also don't have to be good on the field as long as you still have a big enough brand to make money away from the field or while losing on the field. So it's a combination of the two. And here's my 16 teams. Obviously, you include Alabama. Any Super League in college football would begin with Alabama. I would also include Clemson. The concern for a Clemson would be, how long will they stay at the top of the sport? Because, and Clemson fans get upset with me whenever I say this, but they are not one of the top earners. They still are not one of the quote-unquote biggest brands when it comes to, say, TV ratings or revenue or the like. They're one of the most successful programs on the field, so I'm taking them. And I wouldn't really have a second thought. But the one concern would be, okay, say we build this Super League and then Dabo leaves or whatever. They take a step back 5-10 years from now, right, and they're not the same program they once were. They turn back into a pumpkin, for lack of a better phrase. All right, now we have them in the conference. Is it worthwhile? But I'm taking them, regardless, without a second thought, of course. You build a Super League. You have Alabama, you have Clemson, you have Ohio State. Those are the easy three you should always begin with. Ohio State is the big brand and also has success on the field. Then I'm including Oklahoma and Texas. Texas, at this point, because of the brand. But you always assume that with the right coach, the right settings, they can right that ship once again. I would include Michigan. I know they haven't done enough winning. I've always said that the fans' expectations are too high for that program. They think Michigan is a better program than it truly is. But people also love Michigan. I mean, it's third in revenue, even if they aren't winning as much as they should. It is the winningest program in the history, but third in revenue, and even though they are not top 15 in winning percentage in the last decade. So even though they're not one of the best teams on the field, financially, they're performing like it. So, of course, I include Michigan. I would also take Notre Dame for much of the same reasons. Could they win a national championship? No. But are they still bringing people to the TV set? Are they still making all sorts of money? Yes. They haven't won a national championship in over 30 years and yet have been top five in revenue. So I'm taking Notre Dame. I would also take Florida. In fact, I would take all of the Florida schools. Now, Florida is the most successful from a revenue standpoint and of late a winning percentage in Florida. But I would take all three of those Florida schools. I would take Miami because of the brand, and I would take Florida State because of the brand and their history as well. That, again, with the right coach, you imagine they can get back to trying to win national championships. So I would take Florida State, Miami, and Florida. And I haven't been counting how many, but I do have 16 here. I would also include Georgia, of course. USC would make the cut. Not the Gamecocks, but the Trojans. Because while they haven't been good enough on the field, again, still one of the biggest brands. And football is at its best when USC and Miami are involved. And my hope would be, let's take them with us, and eventually they will figure it out. I would also include Oregon, which was one of the last I put in my 16 teams. But I include them because I want a little West Coast representation. Plus, Oregon, they do have a big brand with all their different, you know, with Phil Knight and all the different crazy uniforms. They've had a good program, maybe not a great program winning national titles, but a good program. I would take Oregon. And then I would finish off with Penn State, LSU, and Auburn. Penn State hasn't maybe done enough winning lately, but again, you have the brand. LSU is a big brand and also won a national championship the last couple of years. Even in Auburn, big brand. You keep the rivalry with Alabama, won a national championship in the past decade. So I would take them as well. And those would be my 16 teams. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, Michigan, Notre Dame, Florida, Georgia, USC, Oregon, Penn State, Miami, Florida State, LSU, and Auburn. And the last three that I would put in were Oregon, Auburn, and Florida State. Those are the three that I could probably have my mind changed and swap out for another. But I feel good with that list of 16. The teams that just missed the cut, but I wouldn't want to put them in, Wisconsin and Nebraska were the first I thought of, that I'm going to leave them out. Now, Wisconsin, they produce plenty of talent and, you know, win a bunch of games, but they haven't been able to win a national championship, and the brand, buzzword, the brand isn't as strong as those other schools I mentioned, as even a Michigan. Wisconsin may be more successful than Michigan in terms of winning football games, but Michigan is going to get more attention, more people to the TV. And Nebraska, they still rank in the top 15 in revenue, so I really consider them. But they can't continue to live off of their 1990s national championships. They've become a lousy program. And I just don't, I know they're top 15 in revenue, but I just feel like Nebraska doesn't carry the same weight as, again, you talk about a Notre Dame or a Michigan or even an Auburn. Right? Florida State has a better history, more recent history that's better than Nebraska. So I just left them off the list. Tennessee would be close as well. Right? Big brand, does have some history, obviously coming from the SEC. And if I was going away from the Power Five, you know, like a Boise State would be considered. But they don't make the cut because they don't have a brand as strong as these other schools, and they don't have the national championship winning ability like some of these other schools. Those would be my 16 teams if I was building some sort of super conference. If I was saying, all right, let's just worry about getting the 16 best programs together, and everyone else can figure out their own thing. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, Michigan, Notre Dame, Florida, Georgia, USC, Oregon, Penn State, Miami, Florida State, LSU, and Auburn. That's how I would pick the top 16. You can always reach out to the show. Try to correct me as well. 843-721-9500 to give a call, to call the show. You can always get to us on Twitter at Moro Middays or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and leave a comment for the show there. Coming up, Team USA, we'll continue to talk about Oklahoma, Texas, the SEC throughout the afternoon. But coming up, Team USA embarrassed themselves once again over the weekend to begin the Olympics. And also, which teams will be the next to end their title droughts after Milwaukee? The Bucks became the latest. They just celebrated their championship with their victory parade over the weekend in Milwaukee. Which team in each sport will be next to end their drought? We'll get to that coming up. It's the Moro Midday Show. right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Teams will be next to break their title droughts in all sports. The Milwaukee Bucks finally got their championship. Who's next in line? We'll get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll get back to the SEC talk with Oklahoma and Texas coming up a little bit later on as well. But the Milwaukee Bucks won the NBA championship last week. They had their victory parade over the weekend. Then guys like Chris Middleton joined the Olympic team over in Tokyo. We'll get to that in just a little bit. And we touched on this a little bit Thursday before we left for the long weekend, because I know they discussed this on Get Up and on Greeny, and they were looking more specifically on Get Up. They focused on the NFL. I want to run through every sport, though, to give you the best candidate to end their title drought next, because this has become a theme in the last 5 years alone. The Cavs won their first NBA championship. The Cubs ended their 108-year drought. The Astros then won their first World Series. The Eagles then ended their 57-year drought. The Capitals won their first Stanley Cup. The Blues then followed that up the next year at their first Stanley Cup. Then the Raptors won their first NBA championship. Then the Nationals won their first World Series. And then the Chiefs ended their 50-year drought. And the Bucks this year ended their 50-year drought. All happening in the last 5 years alone. So who will be next? They talked about this on Get Up. Tim Hasselbeck gave his answer. Now, this was just focusing on the NFL. We'll hear what Hasselbeck says, and then not only go through the NFL, but every sport. College football, NFL, Major League Baseball. Who's going to be the next team in each sport to end their championship drought? Here's what Hasselbeck said about the NFL.
Okay, I don't have to prove this case, but I'm going to say the Cleveland Browns. I know I got a little bit of work to do here to plead my case here. You know, the reason I say it is this. They've done a tremendous job with the talent on their football team, and I get it. It has been a disaster for a really long time. But through some of those bruises and scars, I think they've improved, and I really believe in the coaching staff that they have assembled in Cleveland. I think that the job Kevin Stefanski did in year one, considering what that offseason was remarkable. And if they can get everybody to play around the quarterback at a high level, I think the quarterback's good enough to get it done. So I'm going with Cleveland.
To quote my friend Jalen Rose, say it with your chest. We created this topic on radio yesterday. That's my pick. I agree with you.
That was on Get Up talking about the NFL. So let's start there. Let's go sport by sport here, league by league. Which team will be the next to end their drought in each? Because this isn't just a one-sport thing. We've seen it in every sport over the last 5 years, other than maybe college football. Right? But even Baylor won in college basketball. It's been happening in all these sports. We're getting these new champions ending their droughts, which is good news for long-suffering fans. They mentioned the Cleveland Browns, both Hasselbeck and Mike Greenberg, in the NFL. Well, first, let me give you the droughts in the NFL. The Arizona Cardinals have the longest drought in the NFL. And we're not just talking Super Bowls here. We're talking any sort of championship, because there have been a bunch of teams who haven't won a Super Bowl. But if you go back to the last championship they ever won, before there were Super Bowls and we had the NFL championships, the Arizona Cardinals last won in 1947, long before they ever reached Arizona. So their drought is going on 74 years. Then you have the Detroit Lions. Their last title was 1957. Then you have the Minnesota Vikings. They won the NFL championship in 1969. My Minnesota Vikings have never won a Super Bowl. So we're going on over 50 years. The Tennessee Titans / Oilers, it's been since 1961. The Chargers since 63. The Browns since 64. The Bills 65 when they were in the AFL. The Atlanta Falcons have never won a championship. They're one of five teams, much like the Bengals, have never won any sort of championship. They're another one of those five teams that have never won any sort of championship in the NFL. Which team will end their drought first from this list? I would love to tell you the Minnesota Vikings, but I've been a fan long enough to know whenever they get close, they find a way to break your heart. So I imagine that's what will continue to happen. It's hard for me to believe they're ever going to get over that hurdle, at least anytime soon. I gave you this on Thursday before we left. We spent just a moment talking about it, but I go with the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills are the safe pick. The Browns, I prefer Josh Allen over Baker Mayfield. The Browns may have a more well-rounded roster, but still, to win Super Bowls, you need the quarterback to play at an elite level, at least for the postseason. Maybe not the entire regular season, but you need Eli Manning to play really well in January. Now, you need Joe Flacco to play quote-unquote elite in January, even if they didn't during the regular season. And I trust Josh Allen to make the plays in the playoffs more than I do Baker Mayfield. I would even take the Chargers over the Browns, because I trust Justin Herbert to make those plays more than I do Baker Mayfield. And I think the Chargers roster is really good. My only concern for them is either a sophomore slump for Herbert or their head coach, first-time coach, holding that team back. But I think the Chargers are really good and will be one of the best teams in the AFC this year. The Bills will also be one of the best teams in the AFC this year. We ran through last week on the show teams that overachieved. The Cleveland Browns statistically were one of the most overachieving teams in the league a year ago. So if I had to pick a team to end their drought in the NFL, I'm going to go Bills number one, Chargers two. I would not be as high on the Browns as both Hasselbeck and Greeny were last week. That's the NFL. What about in baseball? In baseball, the Cleveland Indians had their chance a couple of years ago to the Cubs. They blew it. They have not won a World Series in 73 years. That's the longest drought. And they're right around 500 this year, fighting for a wild card spot. The Rangers have not won in 61 years. They're in last place this year. The Brewers are having a really good season. They have not won in 53 years. The Padres have a 53-year drought. The Mariners at 45 years. The Pirates at 42 years. The Orioles, 38 years. The Tigers, 37 years. Which one of those teams will win a World Series first? The easy pick is the Padres, and I'm going to try to avoid overthinking things here and take the Padres. Padres are the safe pick. They're one of the best teams in the league, even if their record may not necessarily indicate it. Right? They're in that tough NL East where they're in third place. But while they're in third place in their own division, they're certainly a top five team in the league. They just added Adam Frazier from Pittsburgh, who is leading the NL in hits, and he comes over into that lineup. The Padres were my pick to win the division. In fact, I picked them to reach the World Series at the beginning of this season. I think they could win the World Series this year. The Padres will be the safe pick. Plus, you have Tatis there for at least 14 years. Machado is still under contract. Eric Hosmer, if they keep him at this trade deadline, is under contract for another 5 years. Joe Musgrove is young. Ryan Weathers is young. That core group should be around for quite some time in San Diego. I would take the Padres. The Brewers, with their pitching staff, also could have a chance this year. They're in first place, having a really good year, have not won a World Series in 53 years. That would be the other candidate, but I'm going chalk by picking the San Diego Padres. In the NBA, now that the Bucks have gotten their championship, you can cross them off the list. Who will be the next team in the NBA to end their drought? The Sacramento Kings. They haven't been in Sacramento all this time, but if you go back to the origin of that franchise, they've been around for 70 years and have not won a championship. That's the longest drought. The Hawks are second, 63 years. Then you have the Suns, who just had their opportunity. 53 years for the Suns. The Clippers, 51 years. How about the Knicks? 48 years. The Jazz, 47. The Nuggets, 45. The Nets, 45. And that's where I'll stop the list. It's a safe bet to assume the Brooklyn Nets will be the next team in the NBA to end their drought. Assuming their guys are healthy next year with Durant, Kyrie, James Harden, they'll win the championship. In fact, Vegas has already made them the favorites next year. Vegas was not thrown off or discouraged by what we saw this postseason. Any basketball fan watching the postseason knows or knew that if the Nets were healthy, we would have a different champion this year. The Bucks would not have gotten past Brooklyn. All due respect to this year's NBA champions. So if the Nets are healthy next year, they should win the NBA championship. I'm going to say Brooklyn will be the next team to end the drought. The Clippers will be another candidate because of the money Steve Ballmer is willing to spend and Kawhi Leonard is there. But the Clippers are much like my Minnesota Vikings, those snake bit franchises. That it seems like every time they have things going their way, it's lined up. Oh, they got a good team right there. They got a home court advantage. They always find a way to slip up. This year, Kawhi Leonard gets injured, and there goes the Clippers season, just when it looked like this could be their year. So the Clippers would be a safer pick, but I just can't see them getting over that hurdle. And the Knicks are another one. You would think Knicks, number one market, plenty of money to spend, rabid fan base, they'll win. but there's also been a reason why they haven't won in almost 50 years. So we have a couple of big markets on there that you would expect to win a championship, but there's a reason why they haven't. I think the Brooklyn Nets, now with their big trio, will be the first to win from this list of teams suffering through a drought. Going over to college football, we'll get to the national champion in just a second, but maybe more interesting are conference title droughts, because a couple of these could end in the near future. In the ACC, I don't think anyone other than Clemson will be winning that conference in the near future. But what's interesting is that NC State has the longest drought of winning the ACC. Their last ACC title the last conference championship was 42 years ago. But they just came out with the media poll for the ACC, and who was the only other team to get a first-place vote other than Clemson from their division? NC State. So NC State has the longest drought, and they also are the team that everyone picked to finish second behind Clemson. So if Clemson somehow does not win the ACC, if we do have a drought end in the ACC, maybe it would be NC State. But I don't think that will happen anytime soon. I think Clemson will continue to dominate the ACC. But if you look at the Big Ten, which team has the longest drought in the Big Ten? Indiana and Minnesota. Going back, 1967 was the last time. They shared the Big Ten championship. How about that? And then they haven't won since. Minnesota and Indiana. That's why they're still sharing it. They don't want to pick a winner because they knew, yeah, we're not going to win again for another 50 years. So let's just share this one, because otherwise one of us is going to be left empty-handed for half a century. But what's interesting is Indiana, you can make a case, should have been, because of COVID and number of games, they could have been in the Big Ten championship last year and had a chance to win. And Minnesota, many people believe, will be a real surprise team this year. In fact, I'm one of those people. I told you, Minnesota will be a sleeper in the Big Ten. Maybe one of those teams will surprise us this year. Michael Penix Jr. coming back. Minnesota's the most experienced team in the country. They get Ohio State week one. Maybe we'll end one of the droughts in the Big Ten. And how about this one in the Big 12? Iowa State has not won a conference championship in over 100 years. They won in 1911. They won in 1912. They haven't won since. Brutal. And this year, many believe Iowa State will be a playoff team with Matt Campbell. Maybe they will finally end their drought in the Big 12. There's a chance we could have a couple of conference championships, a couple of conference champions end their droughts in college football in the near future. But when it comes to the national championship, we know college football is a sport dominated by the same teams. The same programs win the championships. Which team could end that drought? The obvious candidate would be Georgia, right? They have a 40-year drought. And this year, Georgia is believed to be one of the best teams in the country. In fact, we spent some time last week talking about Georgia, that this may finally be the year that, at least on paper, they have the talent, they have the quarterback, most importantly. They have the weapons to allow them to get over the hump. If there was ever a year for Georgia to win, maybe it would be this year. And it's hard to believe, right? Oh, I can't see Georgia. No way they could beat Alabama. They never have. Kirby Smart can never beat Nick Saban. Saban beats all his assistants, yada, yada, yada. Georgia always chokes. I get all these things. Georgia sports always break your heart. I understand that. But if there ever was an era to end a drought, it would be now, with the Bucks and the Nationals and the Cubs and all these other teams that we never thought would get to that point and win a championship. Maybe this will be the year for Georgia in college football. They would be the safe pick, and they would also be my pick. And lastly, how about this for analysis? In the NHL, I don't follow. I'll be transparent with you. I don't follow. Maybe it's my job, but we don't really talk hockey around here. I don't follow the NHL as closely as any of these other sports. But there are 11 teams that have never won a Stanley Cup. The longest drought ever was the New York Rangers at 54 years. And now the Maple Leafs are going to, I think they just tied them this year at 54. So the Maple Leafs have tied the record, 54 years. But the longest droughts in the NHL, the Arizona Coyotes, it's been 42 years. Philadelphia Flyers, 46 years. Vancouver Canucks, 50 years. Buffalo, 50 years. Toronto Maple Leafs, 54 years now. I don't follow the sport close enough to tell you which of these teams will end their drought next. I think the Flyers, with their tradition and how passionate they are about hockey, would seem like a safe bet. And also, how about this for analysis? Just because they're a Canadian team and it's been a really long time, I'm just going to say the Maple Leafs. It's been 54 years for their drought. Longest, tied for the longest in NHL history. And we know how much they love their hockey in Canada. Does that make a difference in building a championship team? Probably not. But I'm just going to pick the Maple Leafs because they have the longest drought and they are a Canadian team in a Canadian sport. So here's that. That's why you tune in for that great analysis. If I had to pick an NHL team to end their drought, I would consider the Flyers because of their tradition and their passion and how much they love hockey in that town. And they've had some good teams in recent years. But I'll just pick the Maple Leafs because they're based in Toronto and also they have the longest drought. So whenever in doubt, pick the biggest underdog, right? The Maple Leafs have the longest drought, probably would be the longest, the largest long shot. That's in large part why I'm picking them. And those are the teams I would say will be the ones to end their droughts in each sport next, after the Milwaukee Bucks became the latest. It's a really interesting era here in sports because of all those unique champions. And as a Minnesota Viking fan, it makes me not excited, but potentially optimistic about the future. If you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, Falcons have never won a championship. The Panthers either, but you know they've only been around for 25 years. Falcons are much more tortured as a fan base. Maybe the Falcons in the next couple years can also add their name to that list. Finally gives these beaten down fan bases something to be optimistic about, some hope for the future, hoping to be the next team on these lists. Coming up, speaking of disappointment, the Team USA embarrassed themselves to start the Olympics yesterday. We'll get to that coming up. It's the Maurer Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Maurer Midday Show.
Coming up, another embarrassment for Team USA, this time to start the Olympics. It's the Maurer Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Just ran through each team to end their drought next in their individual sport. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston. But I did not give you the list while talking about college football of national champions with the longest drought. The longest drought in college football is Rutgers, 1869. They won one of the first national championships, haven't since.
And played in the very first college football game with
that
Princeton.
That makes it even worse. You're the originator. That's your sport. 1869. That's brutal. And I don't think Rutgers is going to win a national championship anytime soon. For Vanderbilt, 1922, second longest drought. Same idea. They're not going to win a championship anytime soon. Navy, 1926. Same idea. Purdue, 1931. I don't think they'll win one anytime soon. Duke, 1936. Nope, I don't expect them to win anytime soon. California, 1937. No, I don't think so. TCU, 1938. I don't think so. Not in the near future. Then you get to Texas A&M, 1939. So while I said Georgia would be the team I would choose to end the drought, Texas A&M would probably be second on my list. 1939. They almost made the playoff last year. Many believe they'll be a top 10 team again this year. They're in the SEC. It gives you a chance every season. Texas A&M would be the other team I would consider with a much longer drought than Georgia. Stanford, 1940, could eventually get to that point. Wisconsin, 1942, same idea. Maybe in the next decade they get to a national championship level. You have Army, 1946, and Kentucky, 1950. Those are the 12 longest droughts in college football. I think Kentucky will be improved this year, but not to the point where they'll be competing for a national championship. I don't think that'll happen anytime soon. Speaking of hardship, broken hearts, a tough team to watch or root for, a team that is trying to win a championship that may come up short. I don't know. How's that for a segue? Team USA in the Olympics. They started the Olympics with a loss yesterday to France, 83-76. Not only was this game at 8 a.m. Eastern time yesterday morning, but also I believe they put it on their streaming service, like Peacock Premium, whatever it is. So you had to pay to watch the game, which says either two things. You can look at it half glass half full or glass half empty. Either they believe NBC thinks that highly of Team USA that people are going to pay to watch them, or there's that little interest that they're thinking, let's not put them on our main TV stations where everyone's watching the Olympics. Let's put them over here, right? Like ESPN3. You watch college football on Saturday, they put all the big games on actual TV. And then the secondary games, you know, like the Southern Conference, unfortunately, they go on ESPN3 or ESPN Plus online. Like, you want to watch them, okay, you got to go over here to the internet. Our second, actually, for ESPN, their third option. Not ESPN, not ESPN2, but over here. They tuck them away over there. So Team USA may be getting the same treatment. They lost to France yesterday, 83-76. They have now lost three of their last four games. And they start the Olympics 0-1. Now, because of the schedule and the groups and everything, they should be okay to get to the medal round, right? Have a chance to go still win gold and be fine. They play, I think it's Iran next. They should blow them out of the gym. I also thought they should have beat France. They were a 13-point favorite against France and lost by 7. They scored only 11 points in the third quarter, Team USA did. They missed their final 9 shots of the game. They missed 5 shots in the last 21 seconds of the game. And France ended the game on some crazy run to put it out of reach. In the last 7.5 minutes, I think it was, they outscored them like 23-5, something crazy like that. I'll be honest, I did not watch this game. I was out of town, and I wasn't getting up at 7 a.m. local time to watch Team USA against France. Team USA got outscored 22-5 in the last 7 minutes to lose in Game 1. They lost 83-76. Here was Tim Legler on SportsCenter on ESPN breaking down the loss for Team USA and why they should feel embarrassed after losing their opening game of the Olympics.
They've got more talent than any team, obviously, in the Olympics, but each and every day, they're going to get better the longer they're together. So this is certainly not the way you wanted to start this out. And I think, you know, they're going to say all the right things afterwards about, hey, you know, the world is caught up and these teams have NBA players on them. I get it. But they're so much more talented. If they had more time together, collectively, the entire group, I don't think you're going to see this result today. So they're going to get better each and every game in this tournament. This, in a lot of ways, could be a good thing for them. It could be a wake-up call and make them understand the attention to detail that you have to have. Their defense, the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, was really the only sustained spurt of desperation that I saw out of Team USA, and that's when they jumped out and built a big lead. The problem was they couldn't close the deal because they fell in love with the three-point shot down the stretch of this game. And France did a great job executing, getting the ball where they needed to. So they weren't able to close the deal, but I do think they're going to get better each and every day that they are together. So that's the good news for them. Let's see what they can learn from this, because they should feel a sense of embarrassment about this. I don't care who you're playing. If you're Team USA, you're expected to win the gold medal. There should be a sense of embarrassment about the loss, and hopefully that requires them to dig a little bit deeper on both ends of the floor as they go forward.
Tim Legler on ESPN talking about the loss. Yes, France had 4 NBA players. Evan Fournier went for 28. I don't care. If this was an NBA playoff game and you gave me these rosters, Team USA, what if they were the Brooklyn Nets, you would expect them to sweep this series. Right? When you have Dame Lillard and Kevin Durant and Bam Adebayo in the starting lineup and Jason Tatum coming off the bench with Chris Middleton and Devin Booker. I mean, come on. I don't care who France has. But Fournier put it best after the game, when he said, these are great pieces. Let me get the exact quote. He said, they are better individually about Team USA, but they can be beaten as a team. And he's right. They have the better stars, but when you play these other teams internationally, they've been better teams. What's that saying, right? The sum is better than its parts. In this case, Team USA is the opposite. They're better individually than when you put all these guys together. And they're not the best team, at least not yet. It ended a 25-game Olympic winning streak for the U.S., and they have now lost 3 or I should say have lost 5 of their last 8 games with NBA players in the lineup internationally. Unacceptable. We talked about this at length a week or two ago. Yes, the other teams have pros. You have a team full of pros, and you should be winning these games. 13-point favorite. They lost by 7 to France to start the Olympics. We'll wrap up hour 2 when we come back. The Atlanta Braves, this is their season this week, and it begins in a few hours. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Our midday show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio, wrapping up hour 2 on this Monday. Stop me if you heard this before, but this week is the Atlanta Braves season. I know I keep, I'm sure it feels like I'm hanging on, but these next 5 days is the last chance for the Braves. Still under 500. Still a disappointment. I've never been over 500, but they start a 5-game series with the Mets, and they're 5 games out of first place. The Braves need to win 4 out of 5 in this series. A tough task. A doubleheader today, 5 games. It's in New York, right? So you're on the road against a first-place team. You got to win at least 4 out of 5. If you win 4 out of 5, you make up 3 games, and you come out of this series 2 games out of first place. If you win all 5, you're tied with the Mets for first place. And if you, say, only win 3 out of 5, you just gain 1 game. You're still 4 games back. Right? If you lose 3 out of 5, then you lose ground in the standings, so on and so forth. So the only way to really make up the ground to make it worthwhile, because the trade deadline's at the end of this series. The trade deadline's Friday. This series ends Thursday. So we'll find out in these next 4 days, 5 games, you know, are the Braves able to actually compete this year at the Mets? They have shown us nothing all year to make you believe the Braves could actually go on a run to win this division. But this is their chance. 5 games against the first-place team right before the trade deadline. Let's find out. You take 4 out of 5, yeah, tall task. But if you want to be a division champ, you got to win these games. You take 4 out of 5, you're right there, right behind first place. You lose the series, you lose ground, and you're in big trouble. You win only 3 out of 5, that's not enough. You got to win at least 4 out of 5, and it begins with a doubleheader tonight, starting with Game 1 in just over 3 hours. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.